You are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshi on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
Get to people, yeah. What are you gonna with your life. Running like a red disease. Ghetto people.
Stop giving up yourself.
Stop doing what you're doing to yourself. You got to learn to love yourself.
You are listening to African Perspectives, where we review the issues of our day from an African worldview and African-centered perspective. This program is unapologetically African. It is a custom in the African tradition to ask elders for permission to speak, having been granted permission. To our ancestors, whose shoulders we stand on, to our elders, whose shadows we walk in, I greet you, my dear brothers and sisters, in the language of one of the greatest civilizations on this planet. It gave the world the basic disciplines of knowledge of science, math, architecture, music, writing, law, religion, you name it, we did it. The Greeks called it Egypt, but they called themselves Kemet, and Kemet means land of the blacks. I greet you all in the Kemetic language, the word of peace, Hotep. It is truly an honor and a privilege to pour libation because we truly do stand on the shoulders of those who came before us. We're going to use water because water has no enemies. Water is the great cleanser, the great purifier. Everything on the planet that lives, it needs water, from a tiny microscopic organism to a tall redwood tree. We pour water into the earth to invoke the spirits of our ancestors, and we say the word Ashe, which simply means so be it. So we pour this libation to God for all that God has done and for all that God will do. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to Mother Africa, birthplace of all humanity. Everyone who has lived, everyone who will live in the future, we all have a common ancestral root in Africa. We pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. I mentioned Kemet in the opening. Kemet was the height, the apex, the zenith of African high culture. But there were others as well, as Timari, Punt, and Nubia. So we pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa, of Ghana, Mali, Songhai, Benin, Great Zimbabwe, civilizations that were flourishing and growing while Europe was in a medieval or dark age. The University of Sankore at Timbuktu, an outstanding educational institution. So we pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the Ma'afa, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the Infakani, the great tragedy, uprooted out of Africa. Our brothers and sisters lay a carpet along the Atlantic Ocean. We're in North America, South America, Central America, and throughout the diaspora. So we pour this libation to our brothers and sisters who suffered the Ma'afa, the Infakani, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the great tragedy. We pour this libation in their honor and in their memory. We do not know their names, but because of them and their sacrifice, we are here. So we say Ashe. We pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement. If you ever heard me do a libation, you will know that we were not slaves. I repeat, we were not slaves. We were captives. What does a captive want to do? Get free. So we pour this libation to all those men and women who fought against enslavement. In fact, I maintain that some of us are more of a slave today than we were in our initial captivity, because some of us are a slave to vice, to corruption, to drugs, sex, and violence. So we pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement: Gabriel Prosser, Nat Turner, Denmark Vesey, Harriet Tubman. We always resisted, and we will always resist. So we pour this libation in the name and the honor of those men and women who fought against our captivity. We pour this libation to those unborn, those young men and women who will once again lead us back on the stage of human history as a free and proud and productive people. We sashe. We pour this libation to brotherhood and sisterhood, together for the union of family. We need each other. We don't have good family life There's a saying, conditions shape conduct and consciousness. The conditions in our community are bad. The conduct towards each other is not good. Because why? We lack consciousness. And consciousness is more than just awareness. Consciousness is a deeper understanding of who you are historically, who you are culturally. So once we begin to understand the importance of brotherhood and sisterhood together for the union of family. Brothers and sisters, let us all say, Ashe, Ashe.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Good morning, African world. This is Brother Oshi. This is a special program today. We're going to be discussing who killed Malcolm X. On this day, he was murdered. He was assassinated in the Autobahn Ballroom in New York. So we will deal with that discussion. We will play the intro of the Netflix documentary, the trailer of the Netflix documentary, Who Killed Malcolm X? And we have some other features, but my special guest will be Brother Muhammad Abdullah, and we will talk about that. I want to go ahead and give some of the information that I usually give out very succinctly and very quickly, and also, too, read the Inye Sesim of Daily Revolutionary Thought. And, of course, this program is African Perspectives. We're here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. And then other programming that we have here on Time for an Awakening Media, Acres of Diamonds, on Mondays from 6 to 8. All times are going to give at Eastern Times. Let's Buy Black 365 from 8 to 9. And then Conversations, Reparations with Brother Jamoke and Sister Lacey from 9 to 10. On Tuesdays, Black Reality Think Tank with Dr. William Rogers. And then on Wednesdays, Revive with Sister POC from 8 to 10. On Thursdays, Relationships with Joy and Troy at 7 p.m. And then on Fridays, Friday evening at 8 p.m., Time for an Awakening. On Sunday, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., it's once again Revive with Sister POC. And then Sunday evening, it's Time for an Awakening once again at 7 p.m. And then every Monday through Friday at from 10 p.m. Eastern to 12 a.m., it's a Warren Ballantyne show right here on Time for an Awakening Media. And, of course, the number to call is 215-490-9832. There's some other things that are happening in these programs that are happening this weekend. Of course, this is American African History Month. African American African History Month, as I like to call it. There is a history program at the Auburn Avenue Research Center put on by Let Us Make Men and the Black Men Lab. It's a special program. It features a keynote speaking by Brother Michael Simnega, who is an author, organizer, and professor at Morehouse College. The performances are going to be by the Children's of Quilombo, which is an outstanding educational school, African Center School. Sister Akua Taylor, my good friend Bill Taylor, his daughter, and it's going to be outstanding. And that's going to be at the Auburn Avenue Research Library. And then also tomorrow, the real Black History, Unsung Heroes and Sheroes. And that's going to be a presentation at 2 o'clock. Oh, the one I just mentioned, that's at 10 a.m. That is at 10 a.m. tomorrow. And this is at 2 p.m. tomorrow. And that is with Baba Baruti, Baba Bomwali Mumbaruti, Professor Griff, and Brother Kalanji. And that is going to be at the West End Makerspace, which is 1545 Ralph David Abernathy Boulevard here in Atlanta. Also, too, Brother Renoka Rashidi will be presenting in that pretty much in that same area. I'm not sure exactly the place, but in that same area. That's tomorrow evening. Brother Renoka is in town. He's just returned from another one of his trips to Europe and to Africa. I'm not going to announce the other things that I usually announce because I want to get off into this discussion. But I want to thank Sister Mama Nia at the Medunetra Bookstore in the Greenbrier Mall for hosting ASCAC, the Association for the Study of Classical African Civilization. We had a panel discussion talking about the importance and the development of African study groups. And I really appreciate the Medu Bookstore and Sister Nia. And I will be talking to her about the program I'm going to do at her bookstore, because it's a program I'm going to do this afternoon at Pittman Park in the Pittsburgh community here in Atlanta at Pittman Park. I'm doing an African history program that I developed, and so I'm doing that this afternoon at 4 o'clock, right after my program here, and preparing myself to do that in Pittman Park, which is 950 Garibaldi Street here in Atlanta, at 4 o'clock. And I'm going to do it at the Medu Bookstore in the very near future, and we appreciate the Medu Bookstore. Also, too, speaking of that PowerPoint presentation, it was developed by my good friend, Sister Queenie Fama. Sister Queenie Fama made her transition on this day in 2016, and I will always mention her. I will always give honor to her. It's because what she has done. In fact, we were putting together the radio piece, and there's no doubt about it, even though when she made her transition, we were on Blog Talk Radio at that time, and I'm quite sure she would love to be on Time for an Awakening and Black Talk Radio Network. Also, too, on this day, on a birthday, is Nina Simone. Today is Nina Simone's birthday, born in 1933. And my friend Shirley Franklin, her birthday is today, along with Jim Wimbush. So it's a big, special day here for a number of people. But it's also a day of reflection and thought. And so we're going to get off into that. I'm going to read three dates of the NASA Sim, and then right after that, I'm going to play the Netflix trailer to the documentary of Who Killed Malcolm X, and then our discussion with me and Brother Muhammad will take place. So stay with us. Get yourself together. If you want to comment, you can call us at 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832. The Yinye Sesim of Daily Revolutionary Thought. February 20th. Powerful people never educate the victims of their power and how to take their power away from them. The ideology of our former captives cannot save us. We will not be truly liberated until we are the main instruments of our liberation. Dr. John Henry Clark. The vanquished are in no position to proclaim that they will end the bloodshed by seeking or working to cease all violence. They have already been pacified. The most that they can do is work toward disarming the other African Europeans to seek to destroy us, so as to make the European road of destruction easier for them. Only an equal empowered to force this resolution at the international level can authoritatively make such a declaration. Only one is in a position to be victorious, can proclaim pursuit of absolute peace and have others believe that it is of his or her own ideological volition. True lasting negotiation requires equals, and even in peace, the maintenance of that equality. Even though they have claimed this as their divine mission, Negroes and lost souls have no power to declare an African peace with Europeans or anyone else for that matter. This is a decision only those who have not turned from their ancestors' way can make, and only from the seat of power. I say, affirm, I am the main instrument of my liberation. Affirm, I am the main instrument of our liberation. February 21st. If you are deaf, dumb, and blind to what's happening in the world, you're in no obligation to do anything. But if you know what's happening and you don't do anything but sit on your ass when you're nothing, then you're nothing but a punk. Sister Asada Shakur. As warrior scholars, we must define criminal justice system to fit a conscious warrior mentality. There is no need to change this term, only its working definition. For us, the Western justice system is criminal. It is a criminal justice system.
in its creation of the Caucasian supremacist mind, and therefore has been molded to fit its anti-African interests. So when we use the term criminal justice system, it is an indictment. The abject criminal is descriptive of the nature of their justice system as it relates to us. Criminal stands alone as a defining objective. It does not work in concert with justice to describe a system. It works alone as an objective to modify justice system, explaining its character. Affirm, I have no excuse for allowing Africans to be victimized. Affirm, I have no excuse for allowing Africans to be victimized. February 22nd. It is far better to be free to govern or misgovern yourself than it is to be governed by anyone else. The Honorable Kwame Nkrumah. We can never overemphasize the importance of tradition. Our traditions are all that have come to work for us. They reflect our human essence, our interpretation of the universe, and are the most apparent manifestations of our deepest imperatives. In contrast to those who work to bend our minds to their will have taught us, being traditional does not mean being archaic, outdated, outmoded, primitive, backward, unless are out of sync with reality. For tradition is no more or less than all of the intellectual, mechanical, metaphysical technology which naturally maintains the people as they have come to see themselves. It is the result of untold generations consciously working towards to correct their errors and to perfect those corrections. Tradition is the culmination of all that has been tried and proven true through the experience of a people. It defines that the people's worth and existence. Without tradition, a people cease to exist. For these reasons and reasons alone, we must get over the idea that our traditions in and of themselves, but especially relative to Europeans, are bad, dysfunctional, useless, or a liability. We must stop allowing others to convince us that most traditions that do not make us make sense do not have to make sense and therefore can be discarded at will. Affirm, I follow and build on African traditions. Affirm, I follow and build on African traditions. The Inye Sesim of Daily Revolutionary Thought. Brothers and sisters, on this special program, we will talk about the Netflix documentary, Who Killed Malcolm X. Brother Abdul Rahman Muhammad, the brother that pretty much does the narration and the work on this documentary, is truly to be applauded. And you can feel his spirit. I'm going to play the intro or the trailer, and then after that, we will go into some discussion with Brother Muhammad Abdullah.
We're not brutalized because we're Muslims. We're brutalized because we are black people in America.
Power of this man's courage to say this stuff.
It changed the entire trajectory of my life.
He was becoming a figure that transcended the Nation of Islam.
It was politics that really started the rift between Malcolm and the nation.
No, the white man is the greatest hate teacher that ever walked the earth.
The FBI was deathly afraid of someone like Malcolm X.
What kind of democracy is that?
People had to start wondering, if something happened to Elijah Muhammad and Malcolm becomes the leader, it's over for all of us.
And just then the gunfire went off.
Malcolm's death never sat right with me.
The investigation was a failure.
Asking who's guilty is a dangerous question to ask.
What is the real story?
It's in the history book. Leave it there. Leave it alone.
Elijah Muhammad told everybody, do not raise a hand against Malcolm X.
He didn't have to give the order. Someone would take care of him.
The FBI should have known.
Why doesn't someone want to get to the bottom of this?
They never had any intentions of seriously investigating that assassination.
That is my mission. I'm not going to stop until I get justice. Because the official count of who killed Malcolm X, it's not true.
Brother Muhammad Abdullah, Brother Muhammad, good morning.
Good morning, Oshie.
Good morning.
Thank you for inviting me to be part of this discourse. And if I can begin in the name of the beneficent and merciful creator of us all, and ask prayers and peace be upon all of prophets and messengers sent to all the people all over the world since the beginning of humanity, and prayers and peace be upon all those who follow the path of righteousness and to our listening audience. And again, thank you for inviting me on this auspicious 55th anniversary of the assassination of Malik Shabazz, more popularly known as Malcolm X. And I know he would be smiling or is smiling in a metaphorical way to see how large his family has grown since his untimely death and assassination 55 years ago, because a lot of people lay claim to Malcolm. The Muslims want to lay claim to him, the Pan-Africanists, the Black nationalists, the civil rights persons, young people, hip-hop, everybody all over the world love and they claim to Malik Shabazz, and it's well-deserved. And let me just end by remembering his beloved wife, Sister Betty Shabazz, who tragically passed on, and asked for mercy upon Malik Shabazz, Sister Betty, and their grandson, who also passed tragically, Malik Shabazz, the second, I believe he is. Go ahead, Oshie. Where do we want to start?
You know, I know for me, when something tragic happens or something happens that is of note, you can kind of remember that day, what you were doing when you heard about it or seen it or were exposed to it. It becomes something that is indelible within you that you remember vividly. I remember that Sunday afternoon, I was in the car with my auntie from Chicago with my mother. My mother didn't drive. They drove up from Chicago, and I'm riding in the back seat, and I hear it over the radio. And the reason why it stuck with me, because I love Muhammad Ali, and Muhammad Ali was just being involved or getting involved with the Nation of Islam through Malik Shabazz. And in fact, I even bought a Muhammad Speaks a few times just to look at, read about Muhammad Ali, if I could read at the time, very little. And in fact, I've met Muhammad Ali three times, and one was at Muhammad's Mosque number 3, you know, when it was located on King Drive and Wright Street in that area. And, you know, that reminded, and then, of course, the book came out. And I think a lot of us, or either if they didn't at least claim to have read the autobiography of Malcolm X as told to Alex Haley. Because he became a symbol, just as you said, for all of us who gravitated to nationalism, Pan-Africanism, or who was a Muslim, or in that so-called civil rights movement. He was a symbol, a solid symbol. My admiration and love for Malcolm because of, as a model,
He was a model of manhood. When Ozzie Davis, and we're going to play the eulogy at the end of the program, when Ozzie Davis said he was our prince, he was our shining black prince. I take that to heart, and I mean that sincerely, because he was, you couldn't buy him. He was principled. Yes, he had a tumultuous upbringing, you know, the death of his father.
If you lived in America in that time, you were truly a minority of minorities.
If you did.
You didn't have a rough time because, you know, what we were coming out of. But, you know, Oshie, in 1965, when Malik Shabazz was assassinated at the Audubon Ballroom in New York, I was 15 years old. At 15 years old, I had no idea who Malik Shabazz or Muhammad Ali was distinguishable to anybody else. I was not political. I was not aware. At 15, for me, it was love and basketball. I liked girls, and I played basketball.
I say.
And I would call it, some would not call it a kind of a rough upbringing, but I won't go off into that. So like you and most people, unlike you, you are special and rare. Because, again, at 15, I don't know, I didn't, and most of my friends who were, at Rufus King High School and on the Keith Avenue playground didn't know. The only person that I can really remember mentioning before I read the autobiography was a brother named David Cockfield. We shared a love for jazz and R&B soul music. But I didn't read the autobiography until I got kicked out of Rufus King High School, had some charges pending, and ended up getting sent to Wales School for Boys. And it shook my world, losing my freedom like that. There was the book of the autobiography of Malcolm X, and I read it. And like Spike Lee said, it changed the way you look. It may not necessarily have changed you totally, but it changed the way you looked at the world. It changed the way I looked at the world that I came from religiously, which was, you know, black religion, Christianity.
Mm-hmm.
And in the book, Malcolm raised these questions, talking about his own upbringing and then, of course, you can't look at talk about Malcolm without talking about the Nation of Islam, which birthed him while he was also incarcerated, when his brother Reginald came to visit him to tell him about this man, Elijah Muhammad, who was, you know, like a god on one hand or a prophet. He was called the messenger. And Malcolm metamorphosized his life in his world, and he came out and gave his life to that. Despite being married and having a loving wife, four beautiful daughters, I'll never forget one of the parts of the autobiography Alex Haley said to Malcolm once while he was writing the book, "I know you don't celebrate Christmas, but would you be offended if I gave your daughters the gift of some dolls?" He had some African-American dolls that he wanted to give them. And Malcolm said it came to him that he had been so laser focused on representing the name and mission of Elijah Muhammad and his Nation of Islam, he had never bought his daughters a gift or toy. And so that was the other side of Malik Shabazz that I think attracted people. You said it in your statement about him. When you listen to him, probably the closest thing I could think of at that time was John Coltrane.
Mm-hmm.
Listening to John Coltrane and listening to Malcolm, And John Coltrane listened to Malcolm. I don't know how much Malcolm, as a minister in the Nation of Islam, Elijah Muhammad's Nation of Islam, listened to John Coltrane. He may have before he became a convert. But they asked John Coltrane once, or rather, I'm sorry, asked Malcolm once, how would you like to be remembered? And he said one word, sincere. And you felt his sincerity.
Yes.
I'm not saying Dr. King wasn't sincere. I believe he was. But Dr. King made room to play in his mission.
Mm-hmm.
Malik Shabazz made no room to play.
That's right. He was truly dedicated. Yeah.
We all need time to play and recreate. Mm-hmm. But you cannot say he was not for sale.
That's right.
And he was unequivocal in what he said. You didn't think that this is a guy is saying this just because he wants to win me over.
Mm-hmm.
He wants me to go his way.
Well, see, I think
under Elijah Muhammad, he felt that, and after when
right.
he listened to him.
I think that's a good point, because I think that's why I gravitated to him and became involved in the Republic of New Africa, the Black Panther Party, marches. I remember walking over the 16th Street Viaduct in that particular march in Milwaukee, which was the open housing march, and had those bricks and bottles thrown at us trying to go over on to the south side of Milwaukee, you know. And that was one of the last ones that I participated in. But I remember, you know, the spirit of El Hajj Malik El Shabazz.
Well, let's talk about that for a second, Osha, because I never participated. The little riot that we had in Milwaukee was totally selfish. The only thing I thought about when it started, when I saw it coming out of a nightclub called The Scene, I was downtown at this nightclub, and we came out, and people were marching down Wisconsin Avenue, breaking windows and doing whatnot. And so I said to the crew I was with, listen, let's go up to Green Bay to swipe this clothing store. May God forgive me.
Yeah.
I led these people astray. And we made it up there and broke in there.
Yeah.
We lost where we had to some older guys. But, you know, that when that particular incident happened, I still didn't have any awareness of what it was. But one of the things about the Nation of Islam, they were totally other than less. And Malcolm spoke to this, about the selfishness within the paradigm of the Nation of Islam, where they didn't march unless it was something to dealing with them.
Mm-hmm.
The civil rights march or the march, no, as the brother Abdurrahman Muhammad said in the documentary Who Killed Malcolm X, Elijah Muhammad was a tyrant. Most of the leaders of our African-American leaders of that era, this era which we discussed, Ochi, this period of charismatic leadership, these eloquent speaking individuals who could draw hordes to them. Malik Shabazz had it, Malcolm had it, Dr. King had it,
Kwame Ture, Stokely Carmichael had it, you know, H. Rabban, Jamel El-Amin, he had it. At that time, there were many brothers and even sisters who were emerging in that struggle. But my thing was, you know, if you're talking about, I didn't gravitate to the integration piece. I kind of, you know, grew out of that because of that, my understanding in looking at Malcolm and looking at Muhammad Ali, you know, in the stances that he was taking. I guess I was always gravitating to the adverse or the resistance of brothers and sisters against this system, you know. And so.
And that was, I was in that same place, Oshie, before 5 years after reading, 3 years after reading the autobiography of Malcolm X in 1967 when I was at Wales School for Boys. 3 years later, despite being a Malcolm guy, I joined the Nation of Islam because, one, I was living a lifestyle that was going to end up one or three places, me dead or killing somebody or going to jail. I had two sons. You know, their mother was dedicated to me. And the only thing I looked around and saw as salvation or direction that I needed, I had a very undisciplined upbringing, was the Nation of Islam. And again, Elijah Muhammad, Father Divine, Joseph Smith, the leader of Mormonism, and some people like you mentioned the Nation with all these, but yeah, they were all pretty much American-made, made in on this soil religions. It's just that the religions that dealt with African-Americans tended to be, for the most part, exploited. We were told by Elijah Muhammad, Christianity that you inherited from slave masters, white people, the quote-unquote devil, is not for you. Take this religion. And so we were looking, I was looking for something different, and it was risky. Oh, she becoming the kumbaya that you see for Minister Farrakhan and Nation of Islam, it didn't exist during Malcolm's time outside of New York. And most of the African-American community, when I joined the Nation of Islam in 1970, the hardest job in the world is to go out with a white shirt and bow tie and a suit on and say, good morning, sir, ma'am. Latest copy of Muhammad's speech, please. You could get the worst cussing out you ever experienced in your life, because that's how the non-members looked at us, and we looked at them in a disdainful way.
Right, right. It was very adversarial.
You know,
because you had the church-going folks, and you still, of course, have them. And then, of course, you had those who were in the middle, like myself, and looking at both sides. You know, but I had respect for both my parents, well, my grandfather particularly, and my brother got off into the church. I never got off into the church. I never got off into Islam. I guess my mindset was as it is today, you know, I'm for the liberation of African people. I'm for independence, self-determination, liberation, and sovereignty for African people. And I was never wavered from that.
Oh, see, that's
what Malcolm was for.
You know what, Oshie, I've evolved to say, whatever you do, now the word religion is real tricky, because if for some people religion is a choice, for some people they look at religion as I have no choice. This is what I have to do. I was born in this, or this is what I've adopted because I rejected each other. So pretty much, whatever you do is your way of life. And everything, hopefully, that we do is going to have some spiritual or spirituality to it, because we are human, but we also have a heart, like not like that pumps blood, but, you know, feeling. So hopefully whatever you embrace, it has that, and you can only be guided to what satisfies you. So, you know, I've evolved to, I'm not so, you know, hell-bent on convincing anybody. The way I believe is the way you should believe. I believe you can only be guided to what you can be guided to, and try to treat everybody, follow the golden rule. So, we've evolved. I've evolved from the time I was a member of the Nation of Islam. And again, most of those organizations back then were tyrannical, and I heard someone say on the Who Killed Malcolm X piece, and I hear this all the time, and well, evidently there's some people that still need to be controlled, told where to go, what to do, what to say, what to wear. I'm not so in favor of that, as even though I totally adopted it at one time, because when you were in the Nation of Islam, like as I told you, Oshie, it's going, seeing those brothers in that mosque in New Jersey, and I don't want to get too far ahead of the program, but wow, I had not seen that level of entrenchment in a long time since, for me, 1975 when Elijah Muhammad died. That pretty much died in me and most of the people that followed him that ended up following his son. But to see a community of people who followed his son, but still have that kind of East Coast entrenchment to the max. I've had the conversation I've had with you when in terms of learning Nation of Islam mentality, like what's demonstrated with those that community in Newark, New Jersey, is the movie Do the Right Thing, in that incident where they asked Ossie Davis, do you know who was spewing this water out of this fire hydrant? And he said, those who know don't tell, and those who tell don't know. That was classic Nation of Islam speak. You did not tell your mother, your father, your sister, brother, son, daughter, niece, nephew, friend, enemy, nothing about the inside stuff in the Nation of Islam.
It's almost just like the same as some of these so-called secret societies, the Masons and so forth, Illuminati, you know, same thing.
Absolutely, it had an aspect of Masonry, just like Mormonism. The rituals in Mormonism, some of which involved, and this is the part of the paradigm of the Nation of Islam, people like Mitt Romney, who is a Mormon bishop, he has taken an oath that says that if someone criticizes Joseph Smith, their throat should be cut. You can read that in black and white. That's how the Nation of Islam was. That's why it was not difficult, whether they were manipulated by, you know, intelligence services or the FBI or whoever. In the Nation of Islam, if you offended Elijah Muhammad, you could expect a killing to come behind it.
And see, that's the interesting part.
I'm not proud of that.
Right.
I was in that, but that's the reality.
Because in the documentary, you see Muhammad Ali's second wife, Khadija Ali, and she says unequivocally, the messenger said, Donald Elijah Muhammad said, he is not to be touched. But then in the very next segment.
Say that again, Oshie.
The messenger said that she said, he said, he is not to be touched.
The brother of Minister Farrakhan's minister, who was sent to Ghana to start a Nation of Islam in Ghana.
Akbar Muhammad.
He was Minister Farrakhan's assistant in Temple Number 7 when it was rebuilt after it was torched following the assassination of Malcolm. His name was Minister Larry Forrest. But as I said to you, Oshie, there is tons of recordings of Elijah Muhammad. If you could play a recording of Elijah Muhammad saying to one person or any number of people, don't touch Malcolm, leave him alone, all that stuff Muhammad Ali's ex-wife, Talila, was saying, leave him alone. I will kiss your rear end downtown Atlanta, Milwaukee, wherever you choose, at 12 o'clock in the afternoon and give you 15 minutes to draw a crowd. There is no such no recording of Elijah Muhammad saying that, and he didn't say that because his son, Elijah Muhammad Jr., who was the assistant supreme captain, after the temple in New York was firebombed after Malcolm's assassination, all FOI that were ordered to appear in New York, and all standing before Elijah Muhammad Jr., he said, and I was told this when I came in the Nation, and this was probably the only thing you might get repeated because they didn't talk about Malcolm when I came in the Nation. Malcolm's tongue should have been delivered on a platter to the messenger already. You can't say that to people in the Nation of Islam and somebody ain't going to follow up with it, or somebody's not that might be listening is going to foment, orchestrate killing this man for no reason because he outed a man who punished people who committed fornication or adultery, and he was doing it himself multiple times. Malcolm was the biggest threat to the legacy and leadership of Elijah Muhammad. It wasn't successful because he went on and had his last hurrah when me and a lot of young brothers started coming in the early 70s. But clearly, Malcolm was the only bigger threat to Elijah Muhammad in his history was the FBI and J. Edgar Hoover. He did not want to mess with them. That was why, that was the main reason he, what you did hear him say, which I bear witness to, I tell my followers, don't break the law. Don't give the police a reason to bust your head. The only sanction worry was in the temple, if the police wanted to come in without taking their gun off or without getting searched, then it was going to be on. But other than that, you don't jaywalk if you were a follower of Elijah Muhammad. You weren't supposed to have weapons. Even if you legally could, nobody in the nation, Elijah Muhammad made his Nation of Islam as safe and comfortable despite all the rhetoric of Malcolm and the ministers who was nicknamed Son of Thunder. After his experience with the FBI, by the time I came in, Elijah Muhammad was old, man. He didn't want no trouble. He didn't want no trouble. He didn't want the trouble of Malcolm to the cause. But Malcolm's demise had left just a dot to do with the chickens coming on the roof. Big thing for him was, your leader is a liar, and he is a he is an adulterer. That became the weapon that made Malik Shabazz a target, inescapably. Because you was dealing with some people that were some of them weren't right upstairs, man.
Yeah. Well, especially you know, had
look
some
at those brothers in Philly. The situation in Philadelphia.
Yeah, in Philly, man. Them cats was gangsters.
Yeah, the community. Yeah, where Kareem Abdul-Jabbar was connected to, and the leader of that community, which this is not known by a lot of the general public, the leader of that community was the secretary to Elijah Muhammad before the guy in the film, who's probably in his 80s or 90s now, John Ali, who was rumored to be, and if someone asked him, wait, are you an agent for the FBI? Have you ever been an agent? Everybody believed he was, and if you didn't know, think it was before, when Elijah Muhammad died in war, P. Muhammad came on the scene. Yeah, John Ali was an FBI agent, and a lot more people. But point being, that that guy who was the leader of the community that Kareem Abdul-Jabbar converted into, he was the former national secretary before John Ali. And when he became what he called a Hanafi Muslim, which is just the name of one of the more four popular schools of thought in Sunni Islam, based on the scholar of the past, Abu Hanifa, he then started sending letters to the minister of Elijah Muhammad all over the country saying he had their addresses. He was a former national secretary. Your leader is a liar. He's not a prophet. Those guys from Philadelphia, they got together and said, we're getting ready to go kill him. Might be some money in that house. Kareem Abdul-Jabbar bought it. You know, they went there and drowned babies. I don't know what kind of human beings these were. Killed the man's wife, shot his daughter. They got $200. So, you know, these are the same guys who were trafficking in heroin. Much of the money, a lot of the money going through Elijah Muhammad in Chicago. Left hand don't know what the right hand is doing. So there was some criminality that came surface in the Nation of Islam,
you know,
undeniable.
There's a piece in the documentary, and it's part of the trailer, that when the brother says, if something happened to Elijah Muhammad and Malcolm would take over, we would be in trouble. You know, I think that is Elijah Muhammad Jr., or another brother. I don't know if you can remember that piece. That
might
part.
Have been Minister James Shabazz from New Jersey.
Yeah.
Brother with glasses
yeah,
on.
Yes.
Yeah, that was Minister. He
okay, dark-skinned brother, yes.
I didn't notice till I saw this. Well, of course, once Malik Shabazz, Malcolm X, was disciplined, put out for 90 days and then never came back, all those ministers who envied him or jealous of him, his, you know, treatment, as you heard the one brother say, Elijah Muhammad Jr. didn't like Malcolm because, well, Elijah Muhammad Jr. was stuttered. He wasn't handsome. I don't know if it's okay. Talk to your father and your mother. But he hated Malcolm. I never heard that before, but I believe it. Because, again, he was the one who said, all of y'all standing here, Malcolm should have been taken care of. And so clearly he had some envy and jealousy when it came to Malcolm, but so did a lot of the ministers. Farrakhan was always behind Malcolm, grinning and, you know, learning mm-hmm. from him, you know, drinking at the trough, eating at the trough of Malcolm. And, of course, he succeeded him. And, you know, we were told that on the night that Malcolm was killed, Minister James Shabazz from Newark was in New York, and Farrakhan was in Newark, New Jersey that night. And that's why some people, not only his statements, but his proximity to those people and where they came from at Temple No. 25 in Newark, it was alleged that he was there that night, which put him closer to it.
To making sure that it happened. And I know that Minister Farrakhan, when Attila Shabazz and of course, Betty Shabazz at the Apollo Theater had a somewhat of a truce, I think, which was brokered by the imam, if I'm not correct. Some apologies were given.
You're saying what Warfi Muhammad wasn't part of the truce?
He was part of making a truce between Betty Shabazz and Minister Farrakhan, if I'm not correct, that a truce and apology was given. But Farrakhan said that what, just like I guess other Muslims said, that what Malcolm had done, especially the outing of Elijah Muhammad as being an adulterer and fornicator and so forth when he teaches his members not to be, was he was worthy of death.
Of course. That would say you can even feel it from them brothers in you know that I have had, you know, since, you know, the death of Elijah Muhammad, I followed his son, Warfi Muhammad, for a period of time. I eventually evolved to, you know, following the Quran and Prophet Muhammad. And so I have a different look at Warfi Muhammad and the Nation of Islam than most people. You know, you cannot separate the roots of the Nation of Islam from one of the greatest nemesis in the Muslim world is the Ahmadi movement in Islam that started in India in 1898. And the man who came from Pakistan in the early 1920s that he found his way to Detroit, Michigan, and started what he called the Allah Temple of Islam, and then he disappeared, and Elijah Muhammad began to say that man was God in person, just like the Trinity. Basically, he's taken from the template of the Trinity and saying, that man was God, I'm his messenger to all the black people in America, not Africans, not the, depending upon how, if you still had an accent, you might not be able to get in the Nation. If you was from Africa, you couldn't get in the Nation of Islam. If you was from South America and was the color of a piece of coal, Elijah Muhammad was the messenger to the black people in America. That's who his dawah was targeted at. Originally, when you look at the teachings of this man that came to him from Pakistan, and if you look today at the Quran, and when I was a member under Elijah Muhammad, I never paid any attention to this, Oshi, and I'm holding one in my hand. It says the Holy Quran. I don't even say holy anymore. Arabic text with commentary by Maulana Muhammad Ali from the Ahmadiyya Anjuman Islam, Lahore, Pakistan, printed in the United States, Ohio. I mean, that's the roots of the Nation of Islam. And even Warfi Muhammad said himself when he became the leader after his father died, he said when his father kicked him out three times, the people who embraced him was the Ahmadi community in Chicago. So he had an affinity for them, and the roots of the Nation of Islam come from the Ahmadi movement. Now, this might sound like French to German to most African Americans, but I don't think you can really look at the whole picture of Malik Shabazz, the Nation of Islam, Louis Farrakhan, and not factor that in. And so it makes it even more crazy that they killed this man because he criticized his ex-leader. So he lost, when he left the Nation of Islam, he lost his First Amendment rights. And somebody had a right to kill this man, father of four children. Yeah. It's insane. And to hear them brothers in Newark, New Jersey, still with that. No, brother, don't ask. Brother, leave that alone, brother. Yeah,
it's over and done. That's history.
I haven't heard that talk, Oshie, since 1975 and before.
Yeah. Well, listen.
I make a distinction between the Nation of Islam under Louis Farrakhan. This is Nation of Islam 1.0. But under Elijah Muhammad, you can see that hard mindset that still has survived for 55 years. And I hope Brother Abdulrahman Muhammad comes out with some people may be upset he should have did this all in one shot. Do your thing, brother. Let it out how you can.
Yeah.
But this needs to be brought out into the daylight. Yep.
We're going to talk about that when you come back from the break. There are callers on the line. Soon we get back from the break, we'll take some calls. If you are holding and you really want to say something, instead of me just clicking you in and saying nothing, just hang up and call back, okay? Once again, you're listening to African Perspectives. Here's a special day. We're talking about the assassination 55 years later on this day of the Honorable Omar Wali El Haj Malik El Shabazz Malcolm X. Here is Donald Byrd, the theme for Malcolm. You're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network, on timeforanawakening.com, and blacktalkradionetwork.com.
You are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshie on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Welcome back, brothers and sisters. Once again, you're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. This is a special program. We're talking today about the assassination of our shining black prince, Brother Omawale, El-Hajj Malik El-Shabazz, Brother Malcolm X. This is the 55th year of his assassination. I got a text. One person texted me and said to ask Brother Muhammad, why in the documentary there is no mention of Minister Louis Farrakhan? Why do you think that is?
No mention of Minister Louis Farrakhan?
No.
So let's do this, Oshie. So the history of the Nation of Islam under Elijah Muhammad started in 1930 in Detroit, around 1934. So he moved to Chicago. So around from 1935 to 1975, when he died, that was the Nation of Islam. That was the most populous, the largest population of after he died, when his son took over the leadership, before the wave of immigrants that you all, you know, rail about, you know, justifiably, that got grocery stores, gas stations, furniture stores. Before those people came in the United States in the 70s, the face of Islam in America was a black face. The only integrated Islam, and they weren't everywhere, they weren't as populated and as spread out as Elijah Muhammad, was the Ahmadi community. Those brothers were almost distinctive by their propensity to marry heavyset Caucasian women. I'm not just making fun, but they would go out, you would see, you know, they're Muslim and they married these Caucasian women. So that was kind of foreign to us back then. But once Elijah Muhammad died, his son came out and acknowledged a lot of the things that Malcolm, he was close friends with Malcolm, Wallace W.D. Muhammad was. He came out and elevated Malcolm's status to us as a community. No, this brother was not the chief hypocrite. This brother was a Muslim, and he was assassinated. And the reason he was assassinated, because, yes, my father, who at that time, I don't know how many children he had, but eventually when Elijah Muhammad died, besides the seven children he had by his wife, Clara Muhammad, he had 15 other children by other young women.
15?
Which 15.
Other.
If you look up the probate court the case, there were 22 people on the thing for trying to inherit money from Elijah Muhammad, the Nation of Islam. Whatever assets he had after the government got the money, the IRS got their money, the other god that we worship and serve, the IRS, and I don't know who else, but yeah, there were 22 individuals on the docket for inheriting whatever wealth Elijah Muhammad had. W.D. Muhammad started undoing some things that rattled a lot of people. For some of us who had been like caged birds, in a sense, told what to wear, where to sit, where to do this, this, that, we were like some kids. I was in my 20s. I was 25 years old. I was still a young man. And so there was that. But then he spent a lot of time dismantling things his father had put up, some like that building on Stony Island in Chicago. He gave that building up. Remember?
Yes.
Muammar Gaddafi,
yeah, right,
loaned Elijah Muhammad $5 million and then forgave the loan to purchase that building,
right,
so he could have a temple, not a masjid, not a mosque, a temple with seats where you just talk. And you supplicate with your hands out in front, but there was no putting your forehead on the ground as identified by Islam. And so 3 years later,
they took Louis the seats
Farrakhan
out.
Says, mm-hmm, he went to Mexico. This was in Time Magazine interview. I've got a copy of it. He went up on the mothership. I know people's minds go to George Clinton and Parliament Funkadelic, but no.
I know mine does.
Elijah Muhammad preached that there was a ship
like a wheel.
Star Trek style ship in space that was there with 1,500 World War II bombing planes that was going to destroy America and all the white people. Farrakhan said he went up in the desert in New Mexico, went up on this mothership, saw Elijah Muhammad and the alias Master Farrakhan Muhammad, and they told him to start the Nation of Islam over again.
Mm-hmm.
So if I had to guess, Brother Abdurrahman just said, listen, my mission is to get to the bottom of who killed our brother and to exonerate the two men who went to prison for 20 years. One of them is dead now. It had nothing to do with killing Malcolm. That's his mission. So I would guess, what am I going to give Louis Farrakhan? It's almost like the president. You know, you can't, it's hard to ignore him, but if they could, they would, because it's like, I heard this yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the only explanation I can give you, is that he didn't feel what his goal was, in terms of the legacy of the assassination of Malcolm X. He didn't want to muddy the water anymore by adding Louis Farrakhan, which is kind of new jack. And, you know, Farrakhan, one of the things Imam Muhammad did, and then I'll shut up, Oshie, when he took over the leadership, the pampered lifestyle that most of the ministers in the Nation of Islam were experiencing under an old man who spent most of his time in Phoenix, Arizona, maybe came back to Chicago in the wintertime, he dismantled that. And he brought Louis Farrakhan out of New York, where he was the national spokesman under his father, W.D. Muhammad did, and brought him to the west side of Chicago. Farrakhan lived in a mansion on Long Island. And he brought him to the west side of Chicago and said, go over there. If you love Elijah Muhammad and black people so much, you an imam. And he changed his name. His name was Abdul Halim Farrakhan. Go over there and use your pearl tongue, charming ways, and help resurrect them people in Cabrini Green and Robert Taylor Holmes. Mm-hmm. And to take that suit off and put on some jeans. We dealing with poor people. You walking around with chinchilla coat on and Armani suits and alligators? No. We trying to get our people. Go over there and get them. That wasn't Louis Farrakhan. Minister Farrakhan had grown accustomed to a pampered lifestyle. That's who he is. He's an entertainer. He's a preacher. And I love it when he stays in the Bible more than the Quran, because he's not qualified. He's not a mufassir. He's not a scholar of Islam. He has another version of black religion. And I want to say this. This is a description of Dr. Abdul Hakim Jackson about the Nation of Islam. He said, Islam owes its momentum to the distinctly American phenomenon of black religion, a God-centered, holy protest against anti-black racism that emerged out of the experience of American slavery. So it wasn't Islam as brought by the Prophet Muhammad in the Quran. It was the Islam that was designed to respond, him and the man that started, Elijah Muhammad and the man that started, and deal with how we were being treated, how we appeared to most people under Christianity as docile, just basically genuflecting, following the slave master's religion. And so try this. And for some of us, we gave it a try because we just thought it was the stuff. And I give credit. It stopped me from eating pork. But I kind of liken my experience in the Nation of Islam, like Chris Rock said about being in America, living in America, you know, which is good, bad, and ugly. He said being an American, African-American in America is like the uncle that molested you when you was a kid, but he paid for you to go to college.
Mm.
That's like the next thing. It taught me to not eat pork. It got me away from things that I was doing before, you know, some of which I went back to after Elijah Muhammad died. But that's what it represented to me.
Yeah.
And again, I don't think that brother, you know, he wanted to wade in it without complicating
the
image of Farrakhan, because he is still controversial.
No doubt.
How many million man march? Notwithstanding.
Yeah, I mean, because you know, when Kabila Shabazz. Kabila, the one who.
The one that tried to have him knocked off?
Right. Had tried to have Farrakhan knocked off because of the belief.
Now, Oshie, explain what you're saying because a lot of people might not notice this.
Kabila was confronted by some Caucasian with the understanding or the belief that Farrakhan had something to do with her father's death. And so this guy came to her saying that I'm going to do this. I can do this for you, you know. And so that was put into motion. And when it was found out, the sister was in a very bad position. And up until the time that it was understood that her confession about trying to get him killed was coerced, that she was spared some prison time and so forth. Because it was under the belief that Farrakhan had something to do with it. The only thing that he said at the time, which is like all other Muslims, that to go against the messenger, Elijah Muhammad, and to say these things and to expose him as a hypocrite, that individual is truly worthy of death. You know, he didn't really plot anything, I guess. I mean, I don't know. And I don't believe that he was in on what happened coming out of the Newark Mosque and what happened at the Autobahn Ballroom. Unless you have something.
You say that again. You don't believe what?
I don't believe that Minister Farrakhan had any knowledge of what was going to happen coming out of the Newark Mosque or what happened that day at the Autobahn Ballroom.
Well, Oshie, I can only say that as a former member of the Nation of Islam, I don't know how anybody could, with all the information that is known, could. And if you were in the Nation of Islam, who could say absolve Minister Farrakhan? That's why I believe. Now, clearly, if the way it was presented, and I think that element did come out, that she was entrapped. But I don't believe this Caucasian guy, whoever he was, convinced her that Minister Farrakhan had something to do with it. That's what her mother believed.
Mm-hmm.
That's what her older sister believed. And if you and that's why in preparation for this, for those who hadn't seen it, and clearly some hadn't, that's why I posted the YouTube video of Mike Wallace of 60 Minutes, Minister Farrakhan, and Atala Shabazz. And she spoke and looked him right in his eyes and basically said, and look at his attitude, Oshie, that you can see on YouTube where he says my son can talk just like Farrakhan, and he meant it was Malcolm. Did you clean Malcolm up, or did we clean him up? Mm-hmm. Was he our hypocrite, or we your? So if we mm-hmm. dealt with him like you deal with a hypocrite, what have you got to say about
mm.
that's yeah. his attitude?
Yeah,
that's Farrakhan's attitude.
Yeah.
So I don't know if he had something to do with it. But I think it's probable.
Well, just like you just said, I think that pretty much those within the nation understood there was something happening or going to happen, and they were all pretty much culpable in the assassination because they helped create the atmosphere.
No, if something like that happened in the Nation of Islam, and the only experience I have close to that, and this, if you don't mind, you're the man. I'd like to hear from a couple of callers if we can.
Yes, I want to do that too.
The only experience I have similar to that, Oshie, is when I was in the Nation, this might have been 1973, a Brother Southern Muhammad Speaks newspaper in Cordele, Georgia, was arrested, and he had been told not to come back to town selling the papers. He did. The sheriff of that town was going to kill him. He got the gun from the sheriff, killed the sheriff, made his way up selling magazines to Milwaukee, door to door, got caught. Elijah Muhammad put up $125,000 cash, hired the well-known criminal lawyer James Shallow, one of the most expensive criminal lawyers in Milwaukee, and to represent him. And him, I saw the cover that he was given by us in Milwaukee. That was that we were told. Don't, this brother doesn't go anywhere by himself. One of the brothers who killed those people in Washington, D.C., he, I remember when I didn't, we didn't know what he had done. We remember he used to be in the temple in Chicago. They brought him from Chicago. This is a guy who was a heroin trafficker. He killed him, was part of killing the people in that house in Washington, D.C., and had robbed a Jewish furniture store. There were some guys in Philadelphia and set the place on fire when the people didn't give him the money they thought should have been there, set the place on fire with the people in it. That guy would be inside the temple, and he would be at the front. He would go and escort people at the door, sit them down, go back up front. I used to wonder, why? Everywhere that guy went, it was three or four people with him. Mm-hmm. So that's my experience,
yeah.
And nobody talked about that. So if even if that was the case, it wasn't like, okay, we all know who did it in the nation. The people in the nation, unless you were probably in Temple Number 25 and somebody higher up who maybe orchestrated that or told these guys to do that, I don't know.
Yeah.
Then it wasn't talked about.
I
and we didn't know, so yeah. Nobody else would know.
Let me get some callers in.
Out on Netflix.
Let me get some callers in. Caller 404-593. 404-593. You want to make a comment, a question? 404-593.
Are you talking to me?
Yes.
Oh, okay. I'm Brother Gabriel. How you doing?
Hey, Baba. How are you?
I'm fine. I'm doing great. This is a great program you got. Malcolm X was my first teacher, so being in this meeting is very important to me. But I wanted to say that I had an experience when I went to the Malcolm X Grassroots Movements Festival this past summer, and I noticed that during the program, they didn't play any of Malcolm's tapes. So I was asking the woman, I said, are y'all going to play any of Malcolm's tapes? And she said, well, maybe a little later. And so the program continued, and when it ended, they had not played any of Malcolm's tapes. So I wanted, you know, it dawned on me that, first of all, the Malcolm X Grassroots Movement is sponsored by Georgia State University, which I find very suspicious. And I feel that there's a possibility, I don't want to run this past you, if you think there's a possibility that there's a plot that the powers that be may be concerned about Malcolm's message getting to the youth. And so they may have watered down and there may be a plot to water down and diffuse the Malcolm X legacy. And so so my question is it possible that is going on, number one? And number two, can we still get a copy of Message to the Grassroots and the Ballot or the Bullet tapes? Because those were the main messages when I was a youth growing up in New York City in the 60s. That was what woke me up and so many thousands of our people. There's a question about whether the original teachings of Malcolm X are still available today that we can get hold to them and share them with the youth of this generation.
Okay, my brother.
Do you want to take that, Ocean?
Yeah. I believe that you can find them still on YouTube. Somebody just sent me a Facebook piece with a number of quotes, not the whole presentation, but a number of blurbs that he had with the message to the black man, Ballot of the Bullet, and so forth. So I think those things are still available. And if not, I'm not sure where you could really obtain them. If they're not available, there may be some bookstores. I'm not sure where there's some people who have an archive of what Brother Malik El Shabazz, his message, his books, his speeches and so forth. So, I would first go online, try YouTube.
All of that stuff has been digitized.
Yeah.
It's a bit digitized.
And but, it's available.
Osha, can I take a stab at this?
Sure.
So let's do this in terms of Malik Shabazz's legacy 55 years ago when he was assassinated. He was 39 years old. And so some of the and so most of what our youth know about, because you realize you're dealing with this generation and the previous generation that's part of the cyber world, most of them have very short attention spans. So unless something is packaged and branded in a way, but you can mostly attribute most of the knowledge of Malik Shabazz through the Five Percenter movement or group, which spun off from Elijah Muhammad's Nation of Islam under a guy named Clarence 13X in New York. His sons and a lot of the youth, their children who were around during when hip-hop came on the scene in the 80s, they began to spread the teachings of Elijah Muhammad or Malcolm and so forth. However, this is the danger to me in this. Sometimes we take a person who only lived on this earth 39 years old, and we treat them as though if they were here today, they would be saying the same thing. Jay-Z said this once. He said, if you're rapping about the same thing when you 33 that you rapped about when you was 15, you're in some trouble. And so part of our legacy as indigenous Americans of African descent is how do we take from our legacy, from our leaders of the past, so that we ain't freezing them in time, because one thing, and I'll be quiet. By any means necessary, if Malik Shabazz had evolved because he never quit being a Muslim, I don't care if you are son of Ibn Laden, son of Muhammad Laden, or who you are, you cannot do things by any means necessary. If you kill my daughter, that's you. I can't go kill your daughter. She didn't have anything to do with what you did. So I would just be careful as to sometimes, like I said, a lot of people have owned Malcolm, have taken possession of him. This is our leader. This is what he said, the ballad of the bullet. And this is and it can be as good today.
Well, it's always.
If you're going to vote, if you don't plan on voting, listen to the ballad of the bullet. It's nothing like What's the 411 by Mary J. Blige.
Yeah. Well, you know, to me, the understanding is that what he said then is germane and relevant today. To me, there's no doubt. And I look at Malcolm, I look at Malik Shabazz as a person who is timely. He is just as relevant today in terms of he would never stop being a Muslim, but he did stop being a Pan-Africanist, a cultural nationalist. Because those in us in that, he embraced that. That's why, to me, he was very dangerous to this society, to the Europeans' conquest. Very dangerous. He started moving on a world level. That's why he knew that when he couldn't get out of Africa into France, he was blocked. He knew the Nation of Islam couldn't do that. Elijah Muhammad couldn't do that. He knew.
No. When Louis Farrakhan tried to bring back millions of dollars from Libya,
right?
The State Department said,
No, you're not.
So if you're an American living in America, but again, I don't want to be redundant or beat the dead horse. I think to not understand that Malik Shabazz, especially because there are Muslims who have never left Africa and they're still Muslims, but it does not allow them to do certain things. And we've talked about this, Oshie, just by any means necessary. Some things Islam doesn't allow you to do that. But again, I believe Malik Shabazz is somebody that should be remembered. He should be memorialized, and we should get to the bottom of the other people who killed him, the three, especially the three we don't know about yet, and exonerating the brother who has passed and the one who is still living, who lost, like I said,
he lost everything. Brother Aziz.
I believe the travesty of those brothers is like the Central Park 5x10
exactly.
on steroids.
Exactly, because that brother lost everything.
Family connection.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, and we know that, I don't know why this, you know, these law schools, and maybe they will take up the case, have not sought to exonerate that brother and the brother who passed on. But it means the people in Newark opening up. And I don't know whether that is even possible in this day and time, because people like us, we getting old. And how can we make Malik Shabazz appealing and relevant to young people today? And it has to be, you know, not so emotional and have some balance to it, so it doesn't divide people as opposed to uniting people.
We have another caller. Caller, 414-507. 414-507. You have a question, a comment, or concern? 414.
Hello?
Yes, go ahead.
Yeah, I just want to elaborate. I mean, I was listening to y'all, talk earlier in your discussion, or in that particular module, or the opening. And, you know, it's interesting to hear people of your generation, you in particular, Muhammad Abdullah, and by the way, this is Wali, Muhammad's son. But hear you.
Okay. Wali. Assalamu alaikum, man.
Walaikum salam.
All right.
Just to hear you and, you know, Muhammad Abdullah, my father, and, you know, you, I got to call Yeti Brown, man, because I'll be all.
Hey, don't be outing me like that, man.
Okay, call me Lester Leatherwood Smith.
Yeah.
Hey, listen, but you know all I can see. Is that smile, brother. But you know, bear with me.
Okay.
But no, you know, at the end of the day, it's interesting to hear you all's perspective of how Malcolm had an impact on your, you know, on your life,
yeah.
your thinking, on your principles, and so on and so forth. But I just want to say this, you know. I agree, you know, that what has been going on for a long time over this brother's, you know, assassination, an untimely death, is what we would call in the Muslim world or terminology fitna. You know, it's like fitna, you know, based around it, or a lot of dissension. You know, mm-hmm. you know, people holding on to old things and you know, and not willing to sort of move forward in the process of trying to bring to the younger generation and the generation, you know, to come, who he was, how he impacted us, and that's what I want to talk, just elaborate on. The first time I received, I believe my father brought me a Quran, and Abdullah Yusuf Ali, along with Malcolm X Speaks, and it was Malcolm X the autobiography, and I had a minor setback, and what better gift to give someone who was having a setback in his thinking. Was in a state of sort of ignorance at this particular time. And when I read, you know, Malcolm X Speaks and, you know, the autobiography of Malcolm X, I thought I was Malcolm X. When I, it was something about it that just, you know,
it touched you.
I mean, immediately, I wanted to, I'm serious, man. I mean, and I never forgot, you know, with a name like I had up until that point, you know, I really, really want to live up to that name, you know, sort of a Muslim name, or I want to represent, you know, sort of be a representative or an ambassador for Islam in some respect. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of what I got from him, is that the way that he represented what he stood for, you know, I can't find too many people, man, unless they got some type of, you know, unresolved issues, perhaps, I don't know, some sustained frustration or something, you know, that really, really, you know, really was moved by Malcolm, and you can see it.
Yes,
I heard you talking about Wally, earlier.
Let me ask you a question. So, have you ever heard this statement from Malcolm? You don't get your head busted because you're a Muslim or a Christian or this or that. You get your head busted because you're a black man. Now, again, he said this at a time when. Except for maybe New York, where, you know, he could get up on the stage and people would gather. That wasn't replicated in too many cities that I know of. But still to this day, some people will say, you will hear people say, well, I agree with Malcolm. We have to put aside our religious differences. Religion is not what's getting in our way.
No, it's not.
What's getting in our way is kind of like if you picture us in a car, we are arguing over who's going to drive.
Yeah, I mean,
religion
rarely
comes up. And the religion that Malcolm was talking about back then, as a follower of Elijah Muhammad, was a different, like I said, the relationship between black Christians, black African Americans, and people in the Nation of Islam, it was very, very tense filled and antagonistic, no matter how nice we tried to butter it sometimes. So I'm only saying, Wally, that still it comes down to, in this day and time, if we have to move forward or have something that's going to move people, our young people, forward, and I don't think that's been done very well in terms of the leaders we've had, other than passing it on to one of their sons.
Well, let me
along that line.
Right. Let me say this. Go ahead.
Though, you know, because I really want to just touch on how, like I say, hearing y'all talk about how Malcolm impacted y'all, you know, had an impact upon your lives and like, upon your thinking, that, you know, even today, man, because I went through a phase or a period, and I still sort of extracting things from Minister Louis Farrakhan, but you can just see how even in his life, in his delivery, so on and so forth, you can still see that. You know what I'm saying? His, you know, certain charismas that he had and so on and so forth. But so, you know, Malcolm's reach was very long.
Oh,
I think it's
no
still,
doubt.
Yeah, I think it still, you know, sort of resonates today. But unfortunately, man, this is where it's at.
Yeah.
You know, if we look forward in the leaders, you know, that's a tough swing to ask people nowadays. Literally, maybe for some, it's easy. But for a lot of us, to hear the word, hey, man, trust in your leader, that's a very, very tough thing.
Well, especially today.
Let's take another call.
Hold on, let me say this one thing.
Malcolm, I never saw Malcolm, even he had a sense of humor. He know how to hold the audience. But I never saw him as an entertainer.
Right.
And when I came away from listening to him, different from Minister Farrakhan, I could remember what he said.
Yeah.
But well, you have to understand, Al, with the entertainment
all right, my brother.
I mean, like, that's another subject. But we see, we can get into why, you know, because this is what I'm going to say. You know, I'm going to say that for trying to bring this brother's legacy into the lives of, you know, of our children and that has to start in the household. You know, we can't depend on leaders.
No doubt. But remember what he said. Well,
I just want to finish this. Ain't no leader.
Stop singing.
Okay.
And start swinging.
That's right.
But check this out.
Hold on, brother. Let us
get another call.
Yeah, I appreciate it, Brother Wally. Listen. Okay. 646-646. Good afternoon.
Yo, what's happening, Oshi and your brother there with you?
How you doing, Jay?
Let me ask you, that's my new name,
Oshi, the brother there with you.
Excuse me, brother. Repeat your name again. I've heard you numerous a time, but I'm not good with names, so no disrespect.
Muhammad Abdullah.
Muhammad.
That's
Abdullah.
Right.
Just Muhammad. Well,
just Muhammad.
Don't call me Mo, but Muhammad is sufficient.
Right Muhammad. On. Okay.
Listen, Oshi, let me ask you this right quick. Did you say that you don't think Farrakhan had nothing to do with the assassination of Brother Malcolm?
I believe that. Hold on, Jay. Let me say this. I don't believe that he was part of the plan, the planning. That's what I believe. You know, I believe that when this call went out, and when Malik Shabazz did what he did, and this real mean-spiritedness within the Nation of Islam, because if he had exposed the messenger of Islam and shown him to be a hypocrite, you know, just like they said, what he did, and they've stated, it was worthy of death. And so, you know, the most radical of it and the ones that wanted to do this was the mosque number 25 in Newark. That's where the guys came out of. Thelmish Hayer said, and he was there. He had a pistol. He was shot. He was getting a beat down until he was rescued by the NYPD. He said there was five people. He said that this brother named William Bradley, who was a kind of big brother, dark-skinned brother,
he never said his last name. Never said his last name. He said the other guy's last name, the brother Abdurrahman, he is the one, his investigation came up with his last name.
Okay.
But the brother, also, Oshie, keep in mind how long this brother held on to that information.
Yes, that's right. Because he didn't say that right away. This happened sometime later when he said that these two brothers, Johnson and Butler, had nothing to do with it. And then
something like two years later. But right. Again, Oshie, the brother is asking you, my question to you as a former firefighter, what forensics do you have to exonerate Minister Farrakhan in an organization? It ain't like Minister Farrakhan was a firefighter. He was a member of the Nation of Islam. And if you knew anything about the hierarchy and the leadership in the Nation of Islam, it wouldn't be far to, you know, to think that, of course, Minister Farrakhan, because very few people did things in the nation on their own volition unless it was criminal unquestionably. But if it was something that had to be done, and I know brothers who have been sent on missions like that.
Well, let me say this.
Talked about. How would anybody know whether Minister Farrakhan didn't?
Let me say this. Let me say this, Muhammad. I can't unequivocally say that no, he did not. I think, once again, the atmosphere was created within the Nation of Islam that every higher up was culpable. Every higher up understood that this was going to happen. And when they said he's not to be touched, that's just saying publicly. But those who are in
you can't find a tape of Elijah Muhammad or anybody saying that back then. Just like the man that they say is Master Farrakhan Muhammad, Warf Deen Muhammad brought that man, whose name happened to be Muhammad Abdullah, and put him as the leader of a masjid in Oakland, California. So Nation of Islam is kind of, I mean, if you haven't been, it'd be like me.
Hold on, Jay.
I love you like a brother, but I don't know the inside workings of your family.
Right, I understand, and you're right, and I don't. Brother Jay, go ahead.
He was, if anything, complicit in the death of Malcolm. You have to at least say that. Now, as far as anything else go, I don't know the inner workings of the Nation of Islam. Now, when we go to present day in regards to Malcolm, you know, my feelings is always this. It's been over 50-some years since his passing. I'm past it myself. I think we need to be looking for new leadership to guide us in a new direction on where we're going and just take the
lesson
that Malcolm gave us to continuously put him in the position that he's in should just be on the ancestral reign and a teaching reign in regards to things that he said and he done in regards to his discipline as a human being.
And I think
I'm almost finished.
Okay.
We need new ideas. We need new things to take us to the next level.
And I think that, see, I look at Malcolm as the model. I look at what Ozzie Davis said in the eulogy. He was our shining black prince. I look at a man who is uncompromising. I look at when, and it's in the documentary, when the FBI comes to his home to have him give up information on the Nation of Islam, and particularly of Elijah Muhammad, give them the membership list and all these other things. And just like you said, Brother Muhammad, that you said, just like those who know don't tell, and those who tell don't know. And that's how he presented that. I don't know, you know? So I look at somebody.
Jay, let me ask Jay a question. Jay, you said you believe Louis Farrakhan was complicit. Do you believe Elijah Muhammad was complicit?
Of course.
So let me validate your answer. Warif Deen Muhammad, Elijah Muhammad's successor and son, was asked, do you believe your father was directly involved, complicit, whatever? His answer was, not by act, but by omission. He may not have given the order, but if he truly had said what Khalila Ali and Minister Akbar said, don't nobody touch Malcolm, and I've never heard this before during the time I was in the Nation of Islam, and I was not in the Nation of Islam when he was killed, but I was around pioneers, elderly people who worked. I never heard that said. So by not by act, in Farrakhan's case, similar to Elijah Muhammad, if he wasn't directly involved, if he had spoke out fervently enough, nobody would have done anything to that brother.
Let me say this, and I know I also just recently got a text.
Move up. Hold on.
I just recently got a text stating that you know, in Islam, you can have as many wives as you can support. You know.
That is absolutely absurd. No, you cannot. That was a practice of Arabs and other people before the advent of Islam. And although the Prophet Muhammad had multiple wives, but according to the Sharia of al-Islam, a man can only have up to four wives, and it's very conditional. Does everybody follow this? No.
Right. But let me just say this.
I ain't never had my four. I would love to have four.
Well, you've been married. Hey, you've been married four times.
In succession. I'm a serial monogamous.
Right. But hold on, Muhammad. Let me just say this. Because I understand what you're saying. As a tenant of the religion, you can have up to four wives. But okay, that being the case, now the question then becomes, as somebody just texted me, a brother texted me, saying that Elijah Muhammad had a concubine, so to speak. And why is this not good?
That's pure bovine eschatology, the same reason that...
Hello? Oh, let me get another caller in. I'll get Muhammad back. I kind of jumped off. Let me go to 404-593.
Hello?
Yes.
Oh, you had me on earlier.
Oh, okay. Okay. All right. Let me go to 336-612.
Yes. Greetings. How are you?
Oh, greetings, my sister. How you doing, Sister Benisiwa? How are you?
Okay. Good. I'm catching the tail, and I tried my best to get on, but I couldn't, so I was just listening.
Okay.
I really can't say anything about what was said.
Okay.
I do want to say that it was obvious to me, you know, in connecting the dots, that there were several parties that were after Malcolm and determined to see him to be killed. The FBI was very clear, and so was the Nation of Islam. And What I feel angry about, is that we as a people are so easy to kill each other or go after each other when we're angry, but we wouldn't do the same thing to George Zimmerman.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, if you're that bad, in numbers especially, whoever it is.
Well, you know what? You make a good point.
You
make a good point because all around the world, we are quick to kill each other. But those who have done things to us, it's just like in South Africa. Brothers and sisters are quick to kill Nigerians who are coming for jobs because they're prepared, or Ghanaians who are coming for jobs because they're prepared, but don't do a damn thing to the Europeans that are still in running South Africa, you know, who have ill-prepared them. See?
Yeah, so it's a form of cowardice. You know that there'll be consequences from the European But, you know, we don't have any kind of standards, any kind of accountability, nothing, you know, as a group. So we just do anything to each other. As a matter of fact, it reminded me of just a regular old gang. You know, we don't like what you did, what you said, so we're coming after you. You know, and that's bull.
Yeah.
That's bull. And I think it needs to be called out, because we have a tendency to not call each other out on some things.
And I think that what's most important, I mean, in this situation, as some of the callers and what it states in the documentary, is that it happened. It's over. But for me, there has to be some justice for the brothers who were unjustly accused and imprisoned for 20 years. And their lives has. So to what small measure for Muhammad Aziz, formerly Norman Butler, and for Brother Johnson and his family, to know that they have been exonerated for what they have done. It's just like anybody else. I just saw recently on the news, you see it all the time, the Innocence Project and other projects that help people who have been wrongly accused, you know, and who spent tremendous amounts of time in prison, you know, how they can, you know, restore their lives and need their lives restored, you know. It's very important that that happens. And so what I got out of the documentary, and it was interesting, especially in hearing those brothers from the Newark Mosque, from Mosque 25 in Newark, you know, knowing that this brother who has been in that mosque all that time and all those many years, who got a Muslim name, you know, and in fact, when Brother Ashur Rahim Muhammad was going to confront him, at least that's what he says in the documentary. If I'm wrong, Brother Muhammad?
Yes.
Yeah, isn't that right? He said he wanted to confront him. He wanted to talk to him, you know, about why he did this.
Which incident are you referring to, Oshie? Who wanted to talk to him?
When Brother Muhammad, the brother who's narrating and who initiated the investigation.
Abdurrahman Muhammad.
Yes.
Okay.
And he said he wanted to talk to who? He wanted to talk to William Bradley. He wanted to talk to him. He wanted to say, you know, not necessarily confront him in a bad way, but just talk to him. And why did you do this? You know? And of course he had passed. He made his transition. He goes to the service and the obituary and a lot of people there. In fact, it was asked by Cory Booker, who was the mayor of Newark at that time. Did you notice, man? Yes, I knew him. He was great. But did you know he had done this? I had no idea. You know? But he was...
That sounds like the Nation of Islam to me.
But there it is.
Because he was in their midst. People in the Nation of Islam, those who know don't tell. And those who tell don't know. I mean, Oshie, I'm still flabbergasted that these brothers, despite all Waruddin Muhammad, pulled back the covers and exposed about his father, the nation, crooked ministers. He did all of that. Here's this community in Newark, New Jersey, entrenched, still holding on. I mean, just remember the body language. And the reaction of these people, brother, you don't want to talk about that, brother. Mm-hmm. Brother, stop.
Mm-hmm. Let it go.
Wow.
That's history. That's over. Even at that scene where he goes to the restaurant and they're sitting in the booth, the four of them, the two across from him are the older gentlemen who knew this situation, and then their younger son, and he was saying the same thing. He understood, he knew, but he said, hey, it's over. Let it lay. You know, but to that brother, in his mind and in his conscience, he knew he could not do that, because he knew that people whose lives were destroyed. They spent 20 years in prison for a crime that they didn't commit. And so he wanted to.
Oshie, just the fact that those brothers still their connection to. Oshie, you'll never hear me say, so I don't say Holy Quran, Holy Prophet, that's borrowed from Christianity. But the fact that these brothers still call this man the Honorable Elijah Muhammad is just baffling to me. And I don't mean that my disdain for him or whatever is so much, because at one point I was angry when I realized, damn, the Imam Muhammad, we've been tricked twice? You said we were tricked in Christianity, white Jesus, white everything, everything white, Eurocentric Christianity, and now we call to this black Islam, and this wasn't the truth either? That's like, you know, yeah. That's hard to fathom.
Yeah.
So for a while, I was very, very angry. I had to receive therapy, lies my witness, to come out from under the anger that I felt of being
betrayed.
Lied to twice.
Yeah, betrayed. Let me get Sister Benicia while back in here. Sister, are you
ahead,
still there?
Go ahead.
Me?
Are yes. Mm-hmm.
Me?
Yes, go ahead.
Yes, what that brother said was just so powerful, because that's what's happened to us over 400 years. We keep being re-traumatized by all of these horrible events. And, you know, I'm thinking on a larger scale, since I didn't hear the conversation over the past 2 hours, but I did watch the documentary, and you and I talked for just a minute. On a larger scale, did anybody talk about if the Nation of Islam even attempted to sit down with Brother Malcolm and say, listen, we're brothers regardless of what. These are just words. We're not, excuse my language, we're not a bunch of bitches. You know, let's sit down and talk this thing out so that nobody's anger will just, you know, explode into something dangerous.
No.
The attempts.
No.
And we have, you say now, we need to look at why we are not able to resolve conflict so something like this doesn't happen.
Well,
Everybody obviously knew what was happening. The police weren't there. I mean, the whole thing was set up. It was very clear that this whole thing was being planned, I think, in conjunction with the FBI and NOI working on it together, because nobody would touch this dude.
Exactly right. But, sister, let me say this. If you look at a documentary, and I saw this when Mitt Romney was, as they say, a heartbeat away from the presidency, there's a documentary, a PBS documentary on Mormonism, and they start out pretty much admitting that we know that Joseph Smith, like Elijah Muhammad, Scientology, Jehovah's Witness, made this up. He said that if you start unraveling the string of Joseph Smith's lies and frailties, he said it'll be like taking the Immaculate Conception of Jesus out of Christianity, or removing Muhammad and the Quran from Islam. So these people were entrenched. We were, if you was a member at that time, because there was a split. You know, you're talked about a lot, but about half of the followers, especially those who were drawn into the Nation by Malcolm, split. The ones that stayed with Elijah Muhammad, they were totally invested in protecting what was the Nation of Islam, and to this day still is the Nation of Islam, depending on where you're at. If you're in Atlanta, you got about 5 choices. But naturally, Farrakhan is the bigger, better known. But to this day, that people are still operating like that is just mind-blowing to me, with all of the light that's on, to find out, you know, research and find out the truth for yourself. But no one attempted to talk to Malcolm, because it fit into the narrative too much of him being the chief hypocrite of Elijah Muhammad, just like I told Oshie. When Elijah Muhammad first started this by himself or on his own after the other guy left, his brother, Khaled, and some of them like, no, you ain't the messenger. Mm. So there was a split then, but it's not very well known unless you talk to somebody who was in the Nation back that time. Most of those people are no longer around. But clearly, that protection and trying to take the blinders off, as I told Oshie, after Elijah Muhammad died, and I put back and read, and remember John Ali talking about we can't eat black-eyed peas and lima peas? That's nonsense. certainly some of the food we was eating was good, but, you know, my point being, when you look at that group and what it had put together, they didn't want anything to threaten that, and they saw Malcolm as a major threat to that. And so, no, nobody was sad that Malcolm was killed if you were still up under Elijah Muhammad. Let me back that up. There were some people who did and didn't leave out of fear, and they loved Malcolm.
Yeah.
Let me just also say that.
For sure. Brother Jay, go ahead. Brother Jay.
Yeah, Brother Oshie, can you hear me?
Yeah, go ahead.
You know, I think at some point in time, we're going to have to investigate the Nation of Islam and maybe determine that they were nothing more than a thug organization. I mean, if you look at some of their practices and behaviors during all that period of time, you know, one would think that it had some cultish behavior, thuggish behavior, criminal behavior, things that, you know.
Definitely, just, Jay. Definitely.
I know this, right, brother. I think I've done enough study to be able to call it what it is. But I also will leave you with this. The Nation of Islam has done a hell of a lot of good for black people. And it has to be placed in context. And hopefully we will place it in context. But we have to do it in a systematic, honest, and truthful way so that our people can understand what really happened. And like I said, let me finish this one last point. Let's move on and elevate and leave Malcolm where he belongs and rest in peace and bring forward some individuals and people who could take us to the next level. Hotep.
Hotep, Jay.
So, Oshie, this is my response to what Jay just said. This has happened, it's just that it's not well known. I'm holding two books in my hand right now. Islam and the Black American, Looking Toward the Third Resurrection by Abdul Hakim Sherman A. Jackson. Used to be a professor of Far Eastern Studies at University of Michigan, Ann Arbor. He's now on the professor at USC now. The other book is called Islam in the African American Experience. And there are other books that have pretty much put the Nation of Islam in context. The only thing is you have this big question mark over Malcolm still hanging out there that thankfully this brother Abdurrahman Muhammad has opened up. And I think that needs to come to fruition. And then you also have Louis Farrakhan, which is accepted by a lot. I mean, look at the way people on Facebook the other day, at least in my feed, were talking about the Million Man March. Mm-hmm. In the Sunni Muslim community, we call it the 450,000 man march. We just didn't see that having all that much juice. But I don't want to disrespect the African-American men who went there and atoned. You know, as Cedric the Entertainer said, he had to look the word up because, you know, Farrakhan be using some words. But clearly, some people hold the Million Man March in esteem, and you can't hold the Million Man March in esteem except what? At the top of the pinnacle is Louis Farrakhan.
Mm-hmm. He made the call. He's the only one who can make the call. Jesse couldn't do it. Al couldn't do it. He was the only one who could make the call because many people recognize him as not being bought out, not a sellout.
What's going to happen, Oshie, when Minister Farrakhan passed like Elijah Muhammad? Is the Nation of Islam just going to go away, or is Ishmael or somebody else going to step up and try to keep something going that's pretty much, look, let's keep this in mind, Oshie. Louis Farrakhan has merged his community on some levels with the Church of Scientology and saying, giving credit to that. He even went as far as to say that the man W.D. Farrar, who they call Allah in person, met L. Ron Hubbard in California before he came to Detroit. And you can reason from that, if you take him at his word, that the Yaku history, that big head scientist and all that, is straight out of L. Ron Hubbard. Because what was L. Ron Hubbard besides the founder of Scientology?
He was a science fiction writer.
Guinness Book of World Records,
yeah,
as being the most prolific, right, writer of what was called
science
pulp fiction.
Yeah.
Pulp Fiction.
Pulp Fiction, okay.
Remember the movie Pulp,
yeah,
Fiction,
yeah,
with Samuel Jackson?
Right.
Pulp Fiction was identified because of the kind of paper that was used by Isaac Asimov and L. Mm-hmm. Ron Hubbard. Those are the two prolific writers of science fiction books and so forth.
Right.
And so Jay Barrett kind of touched on it, but you can't get away from this. The theology of the Nation of Islam is made up L. Ron Hubbard science fiction, but there are probably still some followers of Louis Farrakhan,
hey,
I don't know how many,
yeah,
that would kill you over criticizing what I just said.
Go ahead, Jay.
Go ahead.
sorry.
Go ahead, Jay.
Hey, listen, would you talk about who's going to replace Louis? It can't be nobody I see right now as part of the faces of the nation. They just don't have the
charismatic type personality.
Can I just finish?
Well, let me just hold on, Jay. There's three people that I can recognize: Nuri Muhammad, Wesley Muhammad, and Ishmael Muhammad. And
Ishmael
doesn't have it.
Ishmael doesn't.
Of the two people that you mentioned, only Ishmael got a shot because he's Elijah Muhammad's son.
Yeah, but
the other two brothers, I don't see them having a shot.
Well, the thing is this. Remember, after Elijah came Wallace, and we see what happened with Wallace, and then you had the whole regrouping, and let's be honest, Farrakhan wasn't Elijah's son, and, you know, to be truthful, no one could have taken the nation to where it is today without the skill set and the charisma of Farrakhan. You got to give him credit where credit is due for his showmanship and his articulation, and his
give Malcolm credit. What did Malcolm call him?
He's the charmer. But the thing you got to understand is Malcolm never got the chance to lead the nation, and they knew where the nation would be going if Malcolm was at the head. It would have been more disciplined. It would have been more grassroots.
Malcolm was
it would
not
have been
going
a totally
to lead the
different.
Nation.
I didn't think he would, but I'm saying.
Because it was too corrupt.
Yeah, but that's what I'm trying to say. We got to put all of this into practice, and that's what makes documentaries on the Netflix so dangerous because they leave out so much information, and our people are not sometimes that astute to see when they're being played and manipulated. Yeah. So, look, let's say this. Whoever leads the nation, it will determine what they do and how they do. Now, if you got people associated with Scientology, a part of the nation and its continuous development, you're in a whole hell of a lot of trouble, brother.
Yep.
And that's
Thanks, Jay.
There are about five different people in Atlanta who lead what they call the next Silas Muhammad. The other guy whose paper I got when I was there a while back visiting Oshi. So there are already other people around who claim, one of them Elijah Muhammad's brother, who claim they have the real Nation of Islam.
Yeah.
I mean, really, I don't think the majority of us are looking in that direction for any kind of leadership or guidance.
Well, just like all the other, Muhammad, just like all the other theologies, there are so many different sects, so many different beliefs. You know, that's why to me, as a spiritual person, not a religious person, as a spiritual person, I can't go with none of them. Because, once again,
We wouldn't want you, Ochi. I don't think we can convict you in a court of law, even if you said you was a Muslim.
Yeah.
That's what a sister said one time. If you say you are a Muslim, okay, don't say you can have nine wives, but there has to be enough evidence to convict you in a court of law because there is a definitive explanation or example of what a Muslim is, and if you don't fit that, but really, religion can get in our way in some respect, but it's not the whole of our problem because we've been so successfully divided on more levels than look at our families today.
Mm-hmm.
Most of our families today are all over the place. You know, we don't get together on holidays anymore. We spread all over the country. That's where, and we also still talking, Jay, to me, that we listen to be entertained into what should be
our future.
And entertainment and emotion is not going to get us where we need to go.
And that's the problem, because in today's world, we live in America. America's about four things: individualism, materialism, greed, and violence. And so in that context, you are thinking about what's in it for you. You want to be entertained. You don't want to be informed, because by knowing, that would create in you to do what is right, what is proper.
So you asking me to not keep up with the Kardashians and Conway? Is that what you asking me?
Exactly.
You asking me to not keep up with Love and Hip Hop?
That's right.
Housewives of Atlanta.
But that's what we do, don't
we? Jay-Z and Bay.
Yeah.
We have so many distractions.
Right. That's by intent.
Find who we are and who we are not. It's really, really daunting sometimes.
Yes, that's intent. I got to get this caller in, 404-696. 404-696. He left. Sister Bonisiwa, are you still?
Yes,
go
yes.
ahead. Go ahead.
I really want to say something. I've been a member of a few religions, and most of them say about the same thing. And I see most of them are two-edged swords. They'll do good things and validate it with that religion, and do bad things and validate it with that religion. So I'm finding out that religions are not a healthy way for people who want to fight for liberation and maintain their culture. Because, again, I'm looking at the bigger picture, and that's that. We need to take these lessons and look at our indigenous, our original spiritual systems. And if we need a spiritual system, because we're already spiritual beings having a human experience, and my belief system, but look at our indigenous and begin to practice that. There are issues there too. But getting back to conflict resolution, when I asked if anybody sat down and talked with Malcolm, I was talking about resolution. Conflict resolution, rather, because that's something we're really lacking in. And I keep looking at how are we going to get ourselves out of this mess? And there is something called conflict resolution that we can actually practice to avoid a lot of problems. But typically we go into, you know, fighting each other again. So, you know, the issue of getting back to our culture, our African culture, you don't have a leader, a charismatic leader, whom all are going to be flawed. Every one of them is going to have some human issues. And putting people on a pedestal is not a good idea.
See, that's why,
no,
sister, hold on. That's why, understand.
So just very quickly, with the council, so Africans practice on leadership in terms of a council of elders. So it's
exactly.
Not just one.
Exactly.
We need to get back, really work at, not need to, but work at that, getting back to that.
And see, that's why I advocate a cadre of leadership, not a charismatic person, but a charismatic
right.
program. And so if they bump off the so-called spokesperson, you know, we ain't dead. We ain't done. We just turn the other page and we keep on stepping, because the direction for us, clearly to me, is, as Dr. John Henry Clark said, is Pan-Africanism or perish. Unify,
right.
unify or die. And if we don't move in that direction, because it's not about the religions you have. You know, when Malcolm said it best, he said, when I come to the table to talk about the issues that are affecting our people, if I bring El Islam, which is my religious philosophy, there are going to be issues, because you can be a Seventh-day Adventist, you can be a more science, you could be Christian, you could be whatever. There will be conflict. So I'm going to keep it in my back pocket. I'll keep it at home. I'm specifically coming to that table to discuss the issues that are affecting our people. And I'm not trying to talk about why we can't get united. I'm talking about how do we achieve it? What are the things that we have to do as a people? Me specifically, personally, you as well, specifically and personally, have to do to bring us together as a unifying force. You and I, all of us understand who are listening to this call, know the greatest threat to European, Caucasian, extremism, racism, and privilege is the unification of African people. They know it.
Mm-hmm.
And so to me, all the other dumb stuff, and I ain't saying it's all dumb, but all the other stuff, we just got to keep that to the side. Because the main
sister,
thing is we're going to have
a sister a question?
Sure.
Sister, are you familiar with upstream, downstream conflict resolution?
I've heard of it, but I'm not familiar.
So I posted it on Facebook the other day, and just briefly, it talks about this man who looked into this river, and he sees babies floating down the river. This is how I describe our unity or lack thereof. And so he jumps in, and other people start jumping in, pulling these babies out, and all of a sudden he sees a lady put two babies on the shore, and she gets ready to run off, and he said, "Hey, don't go. We still need your help." She said, "I know." She keeps running. "I'm going down there to find out who is throwing these babies in the river."
There you
go. That kind of understanding, you don't need to, I'm not going to bring my religion to the table when we're trying to deal with conflict resolution, because my religion is none of your business. And yours is not mine. And there's nothing about my religion that keeps me from aligning with you other than something stupid. And as soon as I step on that, I'm going to throw that out of my religion or my life. So we can come together, but I don't think religion is our basic problem. If we get back to the root, go back there and find out, okay, who is this throwing these, and why are these babies being thrown in this river? Because we live among a generation that is so homicidal and suicidal and mentally traumatized, it takes a real specialist, somebody with surgical skills, to really get where we want to be going with our people and us as individuals as well. But thank you, sis. I appreciate you bringing up the idea of conflict resolution, because we need some principles like that to govern us when we get sidetracked by minutia and stuff that really, you know, and I'm not saying Malcolm's assassination and the Nation of Islam and all that is not important. I think all history is important, put in the proper context. But clearly, it's time for an awakening.
Time for an awakening. That's right, brother.
Can I say something quickly, brother?
Sure, go ahead. Go ahead, sister.
The FBI made it very evident in all their papers, even up until now, all right, from the 1960s, probably even before, till now, the 2000s, that their goal is to eliminate any black nationalist, any black organization that's a threat to white supremacy or white pathology, because they're not supreme. That will continue to happen.
Mm-hmm.
That's why we have to turn our attention away from a leader or even religions. Religions can, again, a two-headed coin or double-headed sword, rather, they can hurt and they can do harm. Religion at this point in our lives in the 2000s is one of the most divisive systems.
Yeah, I say so.
On.
I say
I'm
so.
I'm watching the nation. I'm connected with the nation. I'm not a member, but I'm watching its demise. Look, where are the stores that used to exist? The Muhammad Farms. I mean, there are things that are just in decline. Christianity is run to greedy pimps. I mean, everything is just going downhill. So they've done a really good job at annihilating us, and we better find a system if we want to survive.
I was listening to Oshie the other day that when I joined the nation when I was 20 years old in Milwaukee, 90 miles from Chicago, which was considered the headquarters, we would drive to Chicago, and when you would come out of the loop and make this bend around this curve, you would look up and you would see Muhammad Speaks. That was the newspaper plant where we were going to pick up the newspaper at that time. The Salam restaurant, the Shabazz restaurant, Fishmonger, all this stuff was in place, but it was very, very fragile. And for whatever the reason, by the time Elijah Muhammad became an old man, those things didn't have the infrastructure to keep them going. So they were in some ways abandoned, or Warf Dean Muhammad said, "You all take that mantle on your own and go into business," and he tried to encourage people, but it just never got off the ground. If you look today, even the time since Farrakhan has resurrected the nation in 1978, where are the institutions? When we used to go to Chicago to buy meat, let me tell you what I found out. Most of that meat we was buying did not come from Elijah Muhammad's farm. It came from the kosher Jewish butcher. The bean pies, the bread we made, but a lot of the stuff we did, you know, we didn't
Yeah.
Let me
wrap this up. We have gone over, and I appreciate those who have been calling and continue to call, those who have texted me for listening to this very important program. I think it's important because even though, yes, it happened many years ago, 55 years ago on this day, but because some lies were involved and some feelings are hurt, and the fact that to me personally, you took away, to me, probably one of the strongest voices that we as African people, not just Muslims, not just, but African people,
had.
That's what bothers me.
Jair
Galuma was serious about what he was doing.
Yes.
You cannot discount that.
No, and very
he
so.
He saw Malik Shabazz.
Yes, as a threat.
Every leader as a threat.
As a threat.
And you cannot remove them from the equation.
And so that was carried on in Jimmy Carter's administration with Zygmunt Brzezinski. When me and you, Muhammad, went to Denver, I proposed that question to Ben Civiletti, who was attorney general at the time, that I read an article in the paper that said that we will do any and everything possible to make sure that Africans on the continent and Africans in diaspora never come together, never join hands, never do what you see in the Muhammad Speaks or in the Final Call when Africans are locking hands or joining hands, making sure that never happens, making sure that the unification of African people never happened. I will do whatever is possible, and that is what happens. So let me...
They did a pretty good job, Oshie.
Yeah. Yes, they have.
Did a pretty good job.
So,
because young people today, young African Americans today, still disrespect each other.
Yes.
About the size of their nose, their hair, skin
yes.
color. We is about as hair and skin crazy.
Yes.
In 2020 as we were in 1920.
I mean, you know, one thing. Although Saru said he's a very vulgar brother, but there's a lot of things that he says on point when he talked about the Nation of Islam. Is anti-African. And he said that Minister yeah. Farrakhan said, hey, your hair should be like the hair on your eyebrows. Shouldn't
well,
be kinky.
He got that from Elijah.
To Muhammad. I know he did.
Teacher.
Yes.
Yeah.
So the point I'm making is that the kind of person that I am, and I appreciate all those who have listened. I hope you will continue to listen. I will be on next week, Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Eastern time. I'll continue to do what I do. But I appreciate the discourse. I appreciate the conversations that we have. So I'm going to end this program. We end this program like we end all of our programs with the words of Stephen Biko. The most potent weapon in the hands of the oppressor is the minds of the oppressed. This program is dedicated and committed to helping to free the African mind. But not just the M-I-N-D, but the M-I-N-E, because under the feet of African people lies all of the resources that everybody wants, think they can't do without, and they sure in hell don't want to pay for it. Brothers and sisters, I thank you for listening. I thank you for calling in. I hope you will continue to join us here on Time for an Awakening Media for African Perspectives every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Shem Hotep means go in peace. Esante Sana means thank you. Bibi Fahoria. Bibi Fahoria means our victorious destiny. When we unite and throw off all this bull, we shall be victorious. Bibi Fahoria family, thank you.